This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 133 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stufkill.
What's up, everybody? 133, Tristan Cannell. Who we got?
Got the Godfather man, Buddy Morris, one of the absolute living legends. He won't admit it himself.
Godfather.
Yeah, he won't like me saying that either.
No, but he's very humble.
Yeah, very, very humble. But in terms of strength and conditioning, he is one of my go-to guys, one of the go-to guys for everyone, I think, in this industry.
Yeah, you can't find somebody with the wealth of professional experience in the American football category. The guy's done amateur, collegiate, professional, currently working with the Arizona Cardinals. They're doing huge things there. They always seem one game away from the Super Bowl. And it's going to be awesome to sit down with a guy that pretty much comes from where I come from. So I'm stoked.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really, really cool. Guys, just before we get Buddy on, a big thank you to everyone tuning into the show. Please continue to share it with your family and friends. And if you haven't yet, subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. And leave us a 5-star review.
Yeah, support the cause, guys. We really appreciate it. Go to SoundCloud. It takes a second. Vision Board Podcast. Go to iTunes. Same thing. It takes a second. Leave us a 5-star review. We appreciate the support. We're just getting started, guys.
Yeah, guys. So keep tuning in. We'll just keep bringing you beasts like Buddy. But in the meantime, let's just get him on.
Bring the man on.
Here he is, Buddy Morris. Special guest is Buddy Morris. Buddy is an expert physical preparation coach and is the current strength and conditioning coach for the Arizona Cardinals in the NFL. Buddy has previously also worked at the Cleveland Browns and at a college level has also been involved with the University of Pittsburgh and the University of Buffalo. We welcome Buddy Morris. Buddy, welcome to the show, man.
Tristan, Johnny, I appreciate it very much. It's a great honor to be here, especially way down under, but I'm thinking you guys got to be very bored or desperate to reach out to me. In fact, you guys reached out to me, I thought it was a mistake.
No, buddy, you get brought up quite frequently on the show. Tristan and I are both strength coaches down in Sydney, and I grew up in Northeast Ohio, so a Browns fan. I also went to the University of Pittsburgh. So you're a guy that I've known about, Tristan's known about. I want to start the show off with sharing some insight to our listeners and yours at home. Currently, what the preparations like getting ready for the upcoming season? What kind of phase you're into right now with your guys?
Honestly, right now we're in what we call a dead zone. The CBA, when it was collected, when the bargain agreement, when it was agreed upon between owners and players want time off. So at the end of the season, till 10 days from now, we're actually in a dead zone. What that means is, you can't be on a field with them. You can supervise them so they don't get hurt in the weight room. If they choose to come in, it's voluntary. You send them a voluntary off-season program for them to follow. So really and truly right now, as physical preparation coaches in the NFL, we are at the mercy of everybody's personal terrorists. And I say personal terrorists, Because as I tell my guys, the only vested interest they really have in you as an athlete in the NFL is number one, to make money, and number two, to put you on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and every other social media account so they can generate revenue. I don't do Facebook. I think the last time my wife told me I had 100 pending friends. Well, guess what? You're not going to get friended because I have no idea how to do that.
Well, I'm glad you accepted our Facebook messages, mate.
For sure.
Every once in a while, I'm like a blind squirrel that finds an acorn. And I can get on there. My daughters make fun of me. My wife makes fun of me. Everybody makes fun of me. But I think social media has really destroyed the world, to be honest with you. I wish I had the money that Zucker has. I don't. But I've never seen so many people live vicariously and delusionally through social media and Facebook and the other Instagram, Twitter, whatever it is. I really don't care if you got out of bed this morning and you're prepping yourself for your 6 a.m. workout, you're all excited about it. I really don't give a shit. There's more important things to worry about.
How do you control your players then, buddy?
That's the hardest thing. Like I said, you send home a voluntary program. You really can't have no contact. And, you know, that's one of the big flaws, in my opinion, of the NFL, is they wonder why there are so many injuries. Well, look at your preparation time that you give preparation coaches. I get 2 weeks. When I was with the Cleveland Browns, we had 6 weeks before we started OTAs, on the field, quarterback school, on the field activities, and then minicamp. Now you get 2 weeks. Well, who in their right mind can prepare anybody for anything in 2 weeks? So you have guys coming in that may have started in March. You have guys that really didn't start until April. You have guys, we've been blessed this year. There was probably anywhere from 20 to 25 guys showing up consistently here to use the weight room on their own. Now, again, you can keep an eye on them, but from the NFL standpoint, you can't train them. You can't go on the field with them. Two guys cannot be on the field at one time. I think when they did the CBA, the older players already knew the younger players were already physically faster and stronger than them. So to lengthen their career, they took away from the athlete's ability to learn mentally because, you know, as part of obtaining sports mastery, there's a technical and tactical application of the sporting activity also. So I think from that and the psychological standpoint, they kept the younger players away. Now, if you're a guy, a pro like Larry Fitzgerald or Carson Palmer or Drew Stanton or some of the other great veterans we have on this team, you know, I don't worry about them because they know what they need to do. What I worry about is the younger guys who are like, oh, I get 8-10 weeks off before I have to show up again. And they don't start on time. They don't get enough of general physical preparation work in. They take too much time off from the sporting from the sport. They're personal terrorists, don't understand what they have to be prepared for. And none of them really go into any general physical work and general physical preparation work. You know, you got to develop linear acceleration first before you start doing all that crazy cone change of direction and agility stuff, because now you're putting the cart before the horse. So you got a guy in February and he's running patterns already. Really? He doesn't need to run patterns. He'll get enough patterns when he gets here in April. So we try to emphasize with our guys through acceleration and deceleration and speed work. We try to keep them as linear as possible and understanding that when OTAs come, that has to be accounted for. Practice is training. Because you're not preparing for a game, you're just training. So you have to account for all those activities in your program design and your physical preparation.
Buddy, I grew up playing football in Northeast Ohio and, you know, started as a 7-year-old, played up until I was 18. You've seen the game. You've been in the game, you know, for a long time, and locker rooms change, mindset of players change as the world evolves. Could you share with us a little bit about the biggest difference you as a coach that you're able to see in the players of today in comparison to maybe the late 80s and 90s?
Obviously, this is a never-ending learning profession. I've always said you limit your knowledge, limit your abilities, limit your abilities, limit developing your athletes. I wish you guys could see my desk right now because I can't see the desktop. 15 research articles behind. I just finished reading Joel Jamison's book on Ultimate MMA Conditioning for the second time. I take an hour out of my day to an hour and a half out of my day every day to find time to read and research. And it's just not reading and researching, you know, like on speed development or strength and conditioning or how to get somebody stronger, how I'm getting better condition. I read what has really fascinated me lately is reading on the brain, the neuroimmune system, the hormonal systems. We really have to start to understand the process of physical preparation and training on the cellular level and what really happens deep inside this intricate working of the human body that we're all so fascinated with. I think we also have to understand that, you know what, no system in the body works independent of the other systems. We are just one big, and I've said this 1,000 times before, and I can't believe people are actually quoting anything that would come out of my mouth, but the human body is nothing more than an interdependent matrix system that communicates with and amongst itself all day long through electronically charged molecules. You're an ever-evolving, fluctuating organism that is self-regulating and supercompensating. You're nothing more than a bioelectrical field that is hell-bent on one function. That one function, obviously, is survival, and that's what adaptation is all about. And yeah. Like I preach to everybody, nothing in this world is linear. I really drive me nuts when people say linear periodization. Even in super training, it says fluctuating. You know, there's periods up and down and waving and intensities and work. So it's really fascinating to me how the human body functions. I think the more we learn about it, especially the brain, you know, the brain that heals itself and the brain that always wins are two great books. You begin to understand that the brain is really the governor, and whoever and whatever designed us, with all due respect to God, really knew what they were doing as each system works together to increase. And what we tell our guys is our goal of our program is to obviously increase the biological output of all our systems, which means improve the working ability of all the systems as a whole. So I think the athlete has gotten bigger, stronger, and faster. And I think what has really changed lately is technology. Mm. Americans are obsessed with technology. We're all obsessed with the latest, greatest, cutting edge, new, unfounded, top secret formula. And guess what? It doesn't exist. Mm. I don't think there will ever be anything in this world, and I'm talking about data collection, I'm talking about monitoring the human body's physiological response to stress, I'm talking about activation work, band mobilizations, corrective exercises. Nothing is ever going to make up for poor programming. If you can't program properly, and you can't understand or take into account the effects that you're imposing upon your athletes from an acute, immediate, cumulative, delayed, and residual effects, I think you're really missing the boat.
Okay, let's stick on programming then, buddy. Can you give us both advice? Obviously, we're both up-and-coming trainers. What's the best way for us to continue to develop in that area?
You know, what fascinates me is I read more and more, and I'm a big fan of the late Charlie Francis. I really think, and I have the opportunity to develop a personal relationship with him. I really think, and Derek Hansen does a great job now that Charlie's passed away, and, you know, Dan Papp and so many of these other people. But Charlie was ahead of his time, to be honest, honestly. His vertical integration periodization concept is tremendous. Understanding that there must be a hint or thread of all the components are involved in developing a power speed athlete, maintained all year long. It's obviously what's being emphasized is the most important, while those others are maintained or retained. One of the things we make sure that we do here, when our volume of speed or acceleration work is the highest, our weight work has to drop. People forget that things that are alike in nature compete for the same CNS resources. And I think that has to be programmed for and accounted for. You know, if you ask me what is truly the most important aspect of training, I think number one and most neglected is the back end, and that's recovery. What are you doing to recovery? What are you doing after the training session? And then comes the warm-up, and you're talking to the king of warm-ups because I get carried away. Ask Anthony and Roger. I have two great assistants, Anthony Crowley, who's our director of sports science, and Roger Kingdom, who's a two-time Olympic gold medalist, former world record holder in the high hurdles. Who I actually, this is how old I am, I coached Roger in college. And he came to the University of Pittsburgh as a freshman. He played football before he started running track. But, you know, I've been blessed with two assistants who really helped keep me in line when it comes to warming up. Right? I get carried away. And then there is the true bulk of the training program. I follow a modified West Side template. I follow a modified vertical integration periodization concept. understanding that everything I look at, I have to adapt or modify to my athletes, my environment, and my circumstances. And people forget that. If this is not a cookie cutter program, you would be shocked at how long it takes me to write a program. And sometimes I believe I try to outthink myself and try to be smarter than I really am, when really the most simplest methods have the most profound results on the human body. And I constantly got to remind myself that there is a reason, there's a method to the madness. I explain to our athletes every day before we do something why we're doing it, what we're doing, what the physiological responses are. I explain to them every day that you're not immediately better after what you just did, because I think educating the athlete on this level or any level is very, very important. So anytime I read something, I always ask myself, now how can I apply that to my athletes? Before I came to Arizona, a friend of mine, Frank Rizzo, who was an intern with us at the University of Pittsburgh with me and James Smith, as assistant track coach at Syracuse University, I knew that he had a good relationship with Dan Papp. And before I even stepped foot in Arizona, I said, Frank, please ask Coach Papp for permission for me to come over and visit. And I wasn't on this job for more than a week. And I was over at Altus bothering Dan Papp, Bill McMillan, Andrea, Chidi, John Gandina, and all the great athletes over at Altus, because it was another opportunity for me to enhance my learning. I think you cannot be afraid to admit what you don't know. I am a guru, and I don't want to be the guru. I don't want to be the guy in the mountain. I just want to be a guy that continues to learn to help my athletes that I'm responsible for improve their and achieve their ultimate performance levels. In fact, we always tell our athletes, it's our goal as physical preparation staff, and it's our responsibility to help you achieve the highest level of physical preparation using methods and means, and I say means, obviously it's exercises, to yield the highest possible results at the lowest cost. As a staff, I believe we spend a considerable amount of time reading and researching the most productive ways to train our athletes. We have some things here in Arizona that we have adopted this year for recovery, and I'm very fortunate to work with a great owner named Michael Bidwell, who takes a personal interest in everything we do. He understands what the research we do. He understands what we're trying to accomplish with each athlete, but he's been a great supporter. In fact, some of the things in our building as far as recovery methods came at his suggestions and some of the things he's read about. So we're doing some great things here that I cannot talk about and will not talk about. I'd have to kill you guys.
Buddy, you mentioned Westside, and it just had me thinking about, you know, we've talked to A.J. Roberts. You know, everyone listening knows about Louie down in Westside. Joe DeFranco's a good friend of ours. What, James Smith, Smitty, you mentioned, what is it about that culture there? What do you think the point of difference with the guys that, you know, revolve around that methodology that make them different from the rest of the field?
First of all, Westside is Louis Simmons. Louis Simmons is Westside. You don't train Westside unless you train at Westside under Louis' supervision. In 1997, I had an epiphany. I had an assistant back at Pitt named Mark Kostick, and he goes to me, and I had just returned to Pitt after a seven-year hiatus when my daughter got ill, and he goes to me one day, he goes, you ever hear of Louis Simmons? And I said, yeah, I believe that name sounds familiar. So I don't even remember how we did it. We got in touch with Dave Tate and Louie, and we convinced Louie. And you know, Louie doesn't leave Columbus, Ohio.
He's one of the
biggest creature of habit. I thought I was a creature of habit. This guy's worse. But we convinced him to come to the University of Pittsburgh. And for 4 hours, I got my ass ripped. Now, at the end of 4 hours, I could have looked at myself and said, you know what? He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's a power lifter. His sport isn't my sport. Or I could have looked at myself and said, you know what? You got a lot to learn. So I remember asking him for every article he ever wrote, and he sent me a small binder. I still have it at home, green cover, black Westside barbell on the front. I started reading. I started reading the book Science of Practice Strength Training by Dr. Vladimir Zatsorsky. I went to visit Zatsorsky on two different occasions, once when we were the Cleveland Browns and once we were at the University of Pittsburgh. Now, here is really what, you know, this is boggles my mind, but this guy is a head of biomechanics for IOC. He's written multiple books and articles on physical preparation for athletes. He's done years and years of research. He's the head of biomechanics at Penn State University. And at the time, not one person from that preparation staff at Penn State University went over and asked him a question. I would have been in that guy's office every day asking him how many times a day my guy should fart to improve the physical performance. But that's, again, we sometimes we get too egotistical and too guarded on our programs to admit that, you know, we have something to learn. I look at a program. Roger came in to me last week, and Roger goes, I have a program, the program you sent me back in 1982 when I was a freshman. I said, please don't bring that in. I'll let it go. myself, and I've done my work. Because I tell people, you know, I don't have a philosophy. Philosophies are for philosophers. I have a system.
Yes.
And my system has evolved over 38 years of doing this. And trust me, it's an ongoing process. Ask Roger and Anthony. There'll be times we're on the floor working out, and Roger and Anthony looking at each other dumbfounded, and they're like, what the fuck is he doing now? I've changed because what is on paper, I don't like what I'm seeing. So you have to be flexible and dynamic as a coach. Your program is a living, breathing organism. It's ever-evolving, fluctuating, adapting, and changing. You can't be one of those guys that just because it's on paper is what's going to get done for today.
Yeah.
I'm one of those guys where, oh, we had a great workout today. I had seven guys puke, and everybody's complaining about being sore. That's maladaptation to training. It really drives me nuts when I read these articles about these college strength coaches who are making guys puke every day.
Yeah.
It doesn't take years to make somebody to puke. My wife, at 58 years of old age, my daughters can make somebody puke if they wanted to. That's not what training is about. That's not a judge of your pro. That's not how you should judge your program. It takes a true understanding of the training process and physiological responses of the human being, and understanding that different athletes have different level of arousals. Athletes have different responses to imposed demands. Athletes have different responses to the recovery methods that you use. And I want to say something about recovery and the fact that we do not promote use of recovery methods during the first couple of weeks of training. And the reason I tell athletes this is, in the medical community, there's a word called tachyphylaxis. It means the drug has lost its intended effect. Well, it's the same thing with anything, with exercises, with recovery methods. You use them over and over again. The body's not stupid. You know, it's going to adapt, and the effectiveness is going to be diminished over time. The hormonal disruptions, the enzymatic changes, the inflammatory responses, all of these disruptions of the systems are all part of the adaptation process. Let the body do its job. Now, don't get me wrong. Or recovery methods, and I've learned these off Joel Jameson, so we only prescribe recovery methods during periods of restoring autonomic function. Obviously, during periods of recovery training, for example, after mandatory minicamp, there's a one-week block where it's all recovery-based work, and obviously during the competitive season. Now, understanding also that during the competitive season, you better have in place a highly evolved and functioning aerobic system to help promote that recovery. So that's, I think, what makes our program different, and that's where we're heading as a physical preparation staff for the Arizona Cardinals, or wherever I go, is what we're going to do.
Buddy, with everything that you're taking in every day, how do you actually start applying it? Is it something that you're just experimenting straight away on yourself?
I'm sorry, repeat that again for me, Tristan.
Yeah, no worries. I said, because you're continuously learning every single day, you know, in terms of testing all the different theories out there, how do you do that? Is that something that you just experiment on yourself first, or you just pick a few athletes? How does that work?
That's why the NFL has a practice squad. I experiment on my practice squad all the time. And as a strength and a physical preparation coach, I train every day. Now, understanding that I shouldn't train every day, that we all encounter stress in our lives. And stress doesn't care who you are. It is multifactorial across many lines. It's the stress of life, the stress of a marriage, the stress of children, stress of work. the ways, and people deal with stress differently. Some people drink, some people get high, some people overeat, some people meditate. For me, I deal with stress by training. Now, that's a misnomer because you're thinking, boy, buddy, you a dumbass because you're just imposing more stress on the body. I understand that. Truly, I understand it. I truly understand I shouldn't do that. But I also understand that it's a release for me. And people tell me, well, you got to get different relief. I don't want a different relief. I'm 60 years old. It's not time for me to start meditating. Though I do every once in a while, you know, in Arizona, you better believe everybody got a pool in their backyard. And I love my pool because it's deep water immersion. I just go out on the steps and just immerse myself in water for 15 to 20 minutes a day and lay in the sun completely naked. Now, thank God, I have a wall around my backyard. Neighbors want to see a 60-year-old man walk around his house naked. If you look at it, there's a lot of research being done of the positive effects on, you know, the hormonal system, recovery and restoration, just lying in the sun for 10 to 15 minutes a day, you know, making sure you're plenty hydrated, new. So that's what I do. And I feel a lot better. I sleep a lot better. There are times, you know, when there are things pressing on my mind with my job that I will text Anthony or Roger at 2 and 3 in the morning. I'm famous for doing that to get something off of my mind so they understand where I'm heading. But a lot of it is I experiment on myself. I use my practice squad. There are guys that you know that are unfortunately are not going to make the organization or make a team. So we'll try some different things. I do not try them on my veterans. I'm very selective. You know, what I do for Carson is completely different than what I do for Drew Stanton. Mm-hmm. And what I do for Drew is completely different than what I do with Zach Dyser. You know, Carson is older. The thing I have to do with Carson is protect Carson from Carson. Because when Carson makes a decision, he can run himself right into the ground. He flew me up to Sun Valley, Idaho, to coordinate his training program with the guy that was going to be training him, because obviously I couldn't be there for the weekend. And a guy I love tremendously from Arizona named Dave Matthews, who is a guy that does tissue work for us. And we all three sat around and brainstormed and structured Carson's program. Again, keeping in mind that, you know, what we're trying to do is just keep Carson from Carson. Because, like I said, he's one of the toughest men I've ever met. So, you know, how we make things applicable is how I see things evolve in my mind, how I interpret things, asking questions. I have go-to people like Mike Gadango at freakstrength.com, James Smith, Tommy Mylinski is a good friend of mine who's head physical preparation coach for Jacksonville Jaguars. I actually trained Tommy when he was in the NFL. He came with me to Cleveland, came back with me to the University of Pittsburgh, and obviously has now moved on and is a head physical preparation coach. And, you know, also, guys, I always hire – bringing people that are smarter than me. I got a guy named Anthony Paroli who was an intern with me, University of Pittsburgh in 2007, 2008. And I'm very selective about who I let in my program. Anthony got in because of Jim Mannion, who's the NPC physique chairman, is a very close personal friend of mine. When I came out of college, I was really obsessed with training and bodybuilding and working out. I joined Jim Mannion's gym, which obviously was a throwback to the old Gold's gym in Santa Monica, California. I had some money after graduating. I didn't have a job yet, so I joined for a month. At the end of the month, I went to Jimmy Mannion and said, hey, Jimmy, listen, my family's poor. I don't have a lot of money right now till I find a job. Can I come in and clean the gym at night, clean the bathroom, if you let me continue to train here? And he just looked at me and said, because you offered me that, I'm going to let you train here for free. And he let me train there for free, which I learned a lot being around Jim Mannion and some classic bodybuilders who came in. But I brought Anthony in, and Anthony obviously is involved under Mickey Marotti of Ohio State's system programming. He owned his own training facility in Pittsburgh with a guy named Cole called Evolutionary Sport, I believe it was. Anthony is my right-hand guy. He's like my younger mind. He understands where I'm going. He understands what I'm trying to do, as does Roger. So these guys are always thinking like I think, and I need to be surrounded by those people. And when I get into trouble, there's always people like Alan DeGenero, like I said, James Smith, Mike Gadango, Dan Path. I know some great, great physical therapists and a very close personal friend of mine, Michael Hope, Derek Samuels, Brett Fisher, Charlie Vinecroft. There's always like these guys out there that I have issues, I will call and bounce things off of. And I think we all need to do that. I really do. I don't think anybody has all the answers. I don't think anybody has figured out. Like I said, I'm just like you guys. Every day is a challenge to make myself better as a physical preparation coach. And why not? We ask our athletes to get better every day, do we not? Why don't we ask ourselves to get better every day? And I think a lot of people miss that.
That's right. What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show. Buddy, I was listening recently to an interview with, do you remember Todd Marinovich's father? You know, he was written on paper as one of the first strength and conditioning coaches in the NFL when, you know, with his work with the Raiders, I think in the 60s. And the question comes from, he took a lot of heat at the time. He was talking about a lot of, you know, people at the time are giving him, you know, calling him, you know, there's no base, there's no science, there's nothing on paper about this. And now there's a position for it. We're talking to the head guy from Arizona Cardinals and yourself. When did that, are you able to look back into time and see when the mindset of the populace started shifting into believing in strength and conditioning as an actual proven results-based system?
I believe it happened at the very end of the 70s, 78, 79. Of course, I was hired by Jackie Sherrill, University of Pittsburgh, in 1980 because he had the vision and understanding that this was about to become a vital component of major college football and the NFL and all athletics across the board. I was fortunate that when I was at the University of Pittsburgh, I was running track. My background is track and field, and Roger will verify this. So, I ran a 10-400 meters.
Wow.
Everybody talked about that, and all these guys on this team make fun of me because I probably enough that every fucking day somebody asked me. I ran 10-4. Don't start questioning me about speed. Why? Look at me because I'm short. Because sprinters are short, stocky, and strong, or long, lean, and elastic, as we know that. I mean, look at Maurice Greene and look at Usain Bolt. In fact, when you talk about technical application of sprinting, there is no one technique. I think that people with a technical model that you apply to your athletes, for the most part, doesn't exist, to be honest with you. And that's because, for a large part, our athletes all sprint the way they do because of anatomical, physiological, biomechanical adaptations or how they're built. You know, look at Michael Johnson. We said Michael Johnson, world record of 400 meters. He ran running straight up, almost straight up, almost leaning backwards. Who's to say he's not right and everybody else is wrong? I got a guy, J.J. Nelson, and I hate to get off the beaten track here, but J.J. runs a blazing 4.3. What do you do? His technique so he can run a 4.7? You're fucking kidding me. There is no one-size-fits-all for every sprinter. There's no one-size-fits-all program for everybody. So you can't run a cookie-cutter program. What they call technique does not exist. There's the optimal model, but there's bands to either side. So you correct errors, and you train to that optimal model, understanding that what works for your athlete may not work for everybody else. We only know different solutions to different motor problems, and solutions may vary from person to person and rep to rep. So that's my that's my little rant on speed training. But back in 1980, you know, I was one of the very first strength coaches ever hired in the NCAA. And in 1980, that was before 1984 when the NSCA was officially formed to oversee the governing body of strength coaches. So I think in the late 70s, early 80s, it really took on a part of the athletic development program, and people started to realize how valuable it was. And don't forget this, guys. Back in the day, we were just lifting weights.
Yeah.
Back in the day, I read a program that went classic pyramid, 10-8-6-4-2, or 5x5. You know, stars, only the strong shall survive.
That's pretty.
What we're all doing. And like I said, when Roger brought that program in, I'm like, oh, please, Roger, don't do that. I really don't feel like hanging myself today. And trust me, I look back on some of the things I wrote and did back in the day, and I'm like, "Whoa, you stupid." but that's self-critique, self-criticism. I think you have to be able to do that to be successful in any walk of life. So I'm sure Arnold Schwarzenegger has criticized himself now and then. You know, and it's just like I hear people say planning to fail is failing to plan. But what they don't tell you in small print under that is about periodization is this. Nothing goes according to plan. If you don't, if you think that you're going to write a 12-week program and it's going to go according to plan, you're insane.
Yeah.
You really are. I'm sure God, when he designed the universe, didn't have one of them days where he said, "Fuck, what was that all about? I got to change that." And I'm sure that the great generals of the world on D-Day thought, "Holy shit, we weren't ready for this. Where'd this come from?" So nothing will ever go according to plan. I think the true, really good physical preparation coaches are those that can make adjustments to make training optimal for that day. And one of the ways that I learned from Dan Papp to assess my athletes is when they first come in and we start, you know, we go through foam rolling and start to begin our warm-up and heart rate elevation. If they're a bunch of chatty cats and you can't get them to shut up, they're ready to go. If you're laying on that foam roller and their eyes are sunken back into their head, you better be willing to change, because your assessment of your athlete begins the minute they start walking into the facility and when they walk into the room to be with you. So your assessment is a daily adventure, and you're going to have guys that look great, and you're going to have guys you're going to have to pull back on and say, "You know what? You're not ready for that today. I don't like what I'm seeing, so we're going to cut back." And a good coach can do that without even looking at heart rate variability or assessing all the technology stuff that is out there today.
Buddy, can you talk about the pressures of actually dealing with the expectations of results? Because back in the day, you were with the Cleveland Browns. They cut you in 2004, and then you had to make a comeback. You had a couple of years on the sidelines, and you made a comeback with the University of Buffalo, which was one of the lower-ranked teams in the college system. Can you talk about that process and just getting through that period?
You know, sometimes you got to, I think everybody should experience that to humble themselves. You ain't all that that you think you are. Some of the worst strength coaches I've seen are at the best college programs. And that's because you're getting the best athletes. I know, because I did it. Back in 1980, 81, 82 at the University of Pittsburgh, we went 33-3. And we went 11-1 two years in a row. And it wasn't anything I was doing. The hardest thing I did was open a door and turn the lights on.
Yeah.
We had the greatest athletes I've ever seen in my entire life. So my job was just not to screw them up. I think the true test of a strength coach or physical preparation coach is when you go to these universities or colleges, is you're not getting the best athlete. And now you're faced with, okay, I've got to find a way or create ways to make these guys better. And I believe you can do that. There has to be a more well-thought-out system. When you're at the Alabamas or the Clemsons of the world, and trust me, I have a lot of great deal of respect for Joey Batson at Clemson because he's been there for a long, long time, you're getting the best of the best. When I was at the University of Pittsburgh, there were times we were not getting the best of the best. When I was let go from the Cleveland Browns and had to return to a profession I have a tremendous amount of passion for at the University of Buffalo, you're looking at 119 teams in Division I college football, and we are 119. So I think everybody should have to go through that process to humble themselves, you know, to understand you're not on top for very long. You know, I love there was a certain Olympic coach down in the deep south, Louisiana, and he was saying, "Oh, you know, you got an Olympic lift, you got to do this, and look how well the University of Miami, University of Tennessee are doing. They're doing my program." Well, when University of Miami, University of Tennessee weren't doing so well, I didn't hear you open your mouth talking about your program. So if you're going to take credit for the great times or the good times, you better be willing to take credit for the times when shit hits the fan and you're not so good. But it just comes down to, I think, a perseverance. You know, I was raised by my mother, who raised five boys. And we were five wild Indians. My parents were divorced in 1973. I was 15. My youngest brother was five. I watched my mother, who was the toughest person I've ever met in my life, raise five boys on a bank teller salary and public welfare or public assistance with really no help. I mean, they evicted us from our house. They took our car. They repossessed furniture. I remember walking with my mother. She had a little red wagon that we went grocery shopping in. And walking home, five little ducklings following her along a major highway as she had the groceries in a little red wagon, all of us in a single file line. So I think it's about perseverance. I think it's about, you know, they always say tough times don't last, tough people do. I'm very blessed and fortunate and honored to be back in the NFL with the Arizona Cardinals. You know, I thank Michael Bidwell, Steve Keim, and Bruce Arians every day of my life to be here. And yes, I understand NFL not for long. I understand. I get tired of people telling me that. But while I'm here, I'm going to try to make the greatest impact that can be made. It drives me nuts when I get resumes or emails or people call me and they say, my goal, my life's ambition, the only thing I ever wanted to do was coach in the NFL. Well, guess what? You're going to be highly disappointed. That was never my goal. That was never my ambition. That was never my desire. That was never my life's pursuit. My goal, my ambition, my desire was always to do the best job wherever I was, whether it was at the University of Buffalo, the Cleveland Browns, the University of Pittsburgh. Didn't matter. I was going to try and do the best job I could possibly do. And if the other NFL came along, and God willing it did, that's great. I was going to take advantage. But I didn't live my life with that in mind. I had a guy send me a resume saying, after 4 years of being in college and 1 year as an intern at an NFL team, I feel I am ready. I just wanted to choke the kid. I started ranting and raving to Anthony and Roger. I think I gave the resume to Anthony. I said, you two take care of this. I'm not going to, I got to take a walk. No, you're not ready. You know, you're not ready after 4 years. You ever see a farmer insurance commercial? I don't know if you guys have in Australia, but, you know, we know a lot because we've seen a lot. I've seen a lot in 38 years, and I'll continue to see a lot, but I will continue to study and read and research and continue to admit things I've done wrong and things, and not stand up and pound my chest on things I've done right. You know, it's a never-ending process. But, yeah, there's a lot of pressure. Everybody deals with pressure differently. But I love coming to work every day and telling Anthony and Rod, you know, it's our job to out-program, out-think, out-grind, out-work, out-motivate some of the best strength coaches in the world in the NFL.
You've coached some amazing athletes. I want to focus on one. He was at I'm talking about Larry Fitzgerald. And part of my – for not knowing this, but you had Fitz at Pitt, correct?
No, I did not. I actually left for the Cleveland Browns that year when Larry was coming in. But Larry is the consummate pro.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about – because I remember watching – there's a video. You know, I was a huge Vikings fan along with the Browns, and this was when Chris Carter was playing for Minnesota, and you could see Fitzgerald as a younger kid, ball boy, on the sidelines. And then watching him grow, seeing him at Pitt, how he handles himself, his professionalism, and then – watching him at Arizona getting so close to a Super Bowl a few different times. Could you share with us some insights on, you know, the behind-the-scenes Fitzgerald, that work ethic, what he has that maybe some people don't?
You know, first of all, I believe there's two factors that determine everything that happens to us in life. Number one is genetics. If you don't believe in the genetic component, all you've got to read is a lot of stuff that Chris Corsiff writes. He does a great job developing speed in high school athletes in Illinois. And, you know, we've talked to people here at Arizona about genetic component, genetic testing, and the ACT M3, the R, double R factor. If you don't possess it, and guess what? You're not going to be that fast. I'd rather take a weak individual, make them strong, and try and take a slow person and make them fast. There is a highly genetic component. Ralph Mann talks about that in his Hurdling and Sprinting Technique, his book, where he talks about, I think it's 7 or 8 limiting factors that we all possess as performance limiting factors we all possess as human beings, and out of all those factors, we have control of only one, and that's development. So with genetics, yeah, if that wasn't true, then you could train like Usain Bolt and be Usain Bolt, but we all know that's not going to happen. I think the second factor is your environment, and that's how you play the cards nature has dealt you, and obviously nature does not deal all of us the same cards. And part of being the environment, and you read the book by Malcolm Gladwell on The Outliers, he talks about the environment you're brought up in. Larry had two great parents. Unfortunately, his mother passed away several years ago, but you have to give Larry's parents credit for instilling in him the work habits that he developed. And obviously, you know, being a ball boy and being around Chris Carter and Randy Moss and those guys and watching them work, how can you not be positively influenced? And he went to the University of Pittsburgh, and he still brings that to the NFL. You're looking at a guy, I think it's his 12th year or 13th year in the league, And Larry refused, even though BA and the organization offers him a Veterans Day off, he doesn't take it. He'll just tell you, I got to be out there with my guys. I got to go to work. Mm-hmm. And he goes up every day and goes to work regardless. And he, again, like Carson Palmer, these are just tough men.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen Larry go out there with his ankle the size of my head and still run routes, not bitch and moan about it, but he comes to work to do his job every day. You know, more people would just do their job. We probably have less issues across the world, but he is the consummate pro. Takes care of himself, and that's the funny thing about the rookies that come in. You know, you play football in high school, you play football in college, in the NFL, it's your job. You're not playing. You go to work every day, and people don't understand that. You know, when you get to the NFL, you've already experienced a tremendous amount of accumulative trauma over time. You know, these guys have been playing since 4 years in junior high, 3 to 4 years from junior high to high school. There's 8 years of football already. They've played peewee since they were 5, and they're drafted at 21. If you do the math, by my math, that's 16 years of trauma to the human body as they make these high-impact collisions. And every level that you step up, the collisions become greater and greater. Now, you see guys at this level, they don't wear knee pads, they don't wear thigh pads. You just put on a pair of shoulder pads and a helmet, and they go run full speed into each other. But a part of learning as a rookie is learning to take care of your body. You know, like I said, the simplest things have the most profound effects on the human body. Well, guess what? We've been studying, the military has been studying sleep since God knows when.
Mm.
Why all of a sudden are people making such a big fuss of it? Our ability to recover are inherently built into the system, built into the body. Hydration. You know, if you dehydrate by 1%, you're going to decrease force production by 17 and 19%. The body's electrical current. What's the greatest conductor of electricity? Obviously, it's water. Not that hard to figure out. And the human body is composed of millions of cells. Cells are living organisms. Living organisms produce waste. Well, from the neck down, the way the body clears waste is through the lymphatic system. From the neck up, the only time that the body is able to clear the cellular waste products from the brain, because the brain is so active all day long and controlling things and filtering things, you know, the cocktail party theory, the conscious thought theory, all of these things, the only time the brain has a chance to recover itself and to get rid of those cellular waste products is when the cerebral spinal fluid accesses the brain, which is only during when? Sleep.
Mm.
It's not too hard to figure out. You know, the same thing with nutrition. People make a big fuss out of supplementation. Here's what supplement means. It means being closer to a desired state, it finishes or complete. You still got to eat quality food. And every once in a while, and I firmly believe this, and I'll probably get people who would point a finger at me again, but you know what? Every once in a while, we need a good junk food meal. So every once in a while, I venture down the street to Popeye, and I freaking enjoy it. I went to fucking Polties yesterday and had a great meal. Here's the secret to a great leg day. You ready?
Yeah.
It is. 24 hours before, you'll have a Five Guys double cheeseburger with fries. You'll have the best fucking leg day ever the next day.
There's
my secret advice for having a great leg day.
I've got a big one on Monday, so I'm going to go down Sunday night and get an absolute monster burger there, man.
Yeah, and I'm a fanatic. Trust me, I'm an expert on cheeseburgers. I would rather eat cheeseburgers than anything else in this world. I had the opportunity to go and a privilege to go. Charles Poliquin stopped in to visit me. And again, once again, back in 97, I went to the Mega Power Conference in Cleveland, Ohio. And the two speakers were Louis Simmons and Charles Poliquin before really anybody knew West Side or what Charles Poliquin was all about. And at that seminar, there was maybe 25 people in a room. They were all personal trainers. There was myself, my assistant, again, at the time was Mark Kostick. There was my close friend, Michael Hook, who was a PT, and there was a guy named Mike Pomondi, who was the head strength coach at Boston College for many years. And that seminar and meeting Louis, that really changed my life. The Charles was in Scottsdale last week and hit me up and wanted to go to lunch. I went to lunch with Charles, and we went to Red Robin, and I said, Charles, I'm going to have bread on my burger. I'm going to have a bun, so just deal with it.
What'd he say?
We just laughed because he had his burger, obviously, without a bun. Yeah. I competed for 30 years as a bodybuilder, and I retired at the age of 50. And I'm like, I'm done paying attention to that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy my life a little bit and eat chocolate chip cookies and burgers. and have a Diet Pepsi every once in a while. But it was a great honor to have Charles here because, again, it was an opportunity for me to learn. I had Carlo Boschelli, who entered, or I met through Dan Papp, stopped in one day. And, again, these are just great. Brett Contreras lives next door, obviously in Phoenix, the glue guy. And Brett is not the glue guy, so please stop referring to him as that. Brett is a tremendous researcher. He's one of the most well-versed and researched individuals I've ever been around. Anthony and I are going over to his house Sunday to a private seminar. His good friend J.B. Moran is coming in, and for 4 hours, it's an opportunity for me to just sit and learn. Anthony and I went to a dinner over here in Phoenix with James Fitzpatrick, the first guy to win the CrossFit Games. Mark Vestigan was there, Dan Pass, Stuart McMillan, myself, Neil Rappi from Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm not forgetting anybody. Dr. Drobot, who's our naturopath, was there. But there's also a guy there named Derek Everly who I've never met before, but there's a guy who brought Bondarchuk over to British Columbia. And I sat there for 4 hours with a notebook. And Brett was there also, Brett Contreras, just taking notes. And again, sitting there thinking, boy, am I that dumb? And Derek filled up a notebook for me and gave me some information, which I told him I'd never share with anybody. But there have been so many great opportunities since I've been here in Arizona to learn that it just fascinates me more and more, this complexity of this intricate organism that we call the human body and how much more there is to learn about it. You know, if you look at some of the research that's out there, there's a 30% difference between a single leg speed hop and the actual amount of single leg speed hop force and the actual amount of force that's applied into the ground when you make contact sprinting on a single leg. There's a 30% deficit. Imagine when the body, the nervous system, and the brain figures out that they can go there without protecting itself. We have human beings. Again, I think Usain Bolt's been runs at 27.8 miles per hour. You're looking at human beings who are able to run 33 to 35 miles per hour. And that's, now I won't be around by then, but that, to me, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Oh, it's huge, man. It's actually interesting that you brought up Brett because I was speaking to him the other day, and I'm glad that you actually gave me the advice of not calling him the glute guy because
he was going to call him that.
I think I was going to call him that.
Yeah.
He is a glute guy, and he gets to look at fabulous asses all day long, and I understand that. He's done more research on the real true value of the glute, you know, and how it can benefit the athletes. But, you know, what amazes, impresses me about Brett is how much knowledge he has from the research and all aspects of training. The guy really is highly intelligent. I look forward to going over to his place Sunday. And he's come to this, come over here when I first got here. And again, we saw him. He came over. I forget who he came with. We sat in the office and talked. Oh, Robbie Burke out of Ireland, because Robbie was in town. But again, you know, just I get excited about those days because it's days that I get to increase my knowledge, which I know will help me program better and benefit my athletes.
Yeah. Buddy, I know your wife competes still in the Masters competition. She's looking great as well. I was just going to ask you, do you coach her as well?
Absolutely. Her son, Fred, and first of all, you know, you got to look at this from two ways. Some people say fortunately, most people say unfortunately, she's married to me. Some people say Fred has been, Fred has been under me now for close to 10 years. Fred is great with nutrition. One of my failures is, you know, yes, I competed for years in bodybuilding. I know it works for my body and contest preparation. But Fred is really very highly intelligent when it comes to nutrition and intermittent fasting. Does a great job at a performance center that he now owns in Buffalo, New York, which is a place I will never, ever return to in my entire life. My wife owns a house there, Clear and Free. I said, honey, I love you to death, but I'm not going back there.
Yeah.
You want back, I understand, but I'll never step foot in Buffalo, New York again. I had to this year because we played there. They had to convince me to get off the plane, and I was the first one off the plane. But, yeah, my wife was a Masters competitor. She started competing at the age of 47 after her late husband, unfortunately, passed away of pancreatic cancer. So I do her training. Fred did her diet, and always done that. My wife retired, at the age of 55. Nationals Masters, she competed a couple years ago. My wife's bucket list cost me a lot of money. My wife comes to me at 58, says, I want to learn to pole vault. So I take her over to see Dan Papp. Next thing I know, I'm hiring Steve Lewis, Great Britain's pole vault champion coacher. But the thing about that is I took advantage of that because now it's a chance for me to talk to somebody who's been in Dan Pfaff's system for a long time and how he interprets it and what he does. So it's great, and I've developed a great friendship with Steve. It's great talking to him and exchanging ideas on training. But my wife, for her 58th birthday, you know, most women want a spa day. Everybody hear that, ladies out there? You want a spa day. At the age of 58, my wife wanted to attend Monica Brandt's Ultimate Ninja Warrior Camp in San Antonio, Texas for 2 days. Now, this is the Ninja Warrior where they run up platform. Yeah. You know, yeah, you've seen it on
I've
TV.
I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, we had a friend who competed.
She's the oldest person there. I think the closest person her age was like, maybe there was a couple 4-year-olds there. But she comes home because she's so competitive, she refuses to take a back seat to anybody, especially women half her age. So she comes home with a first degree AC separation of her left shoulder. But, you know, she went balls to the wall for 48 straight hours. And then I had to mend her when she came back. But yeah, she still competes. Unfortunately, my first marriage failed after 27 years. It's really nice being married to somebody who understands you and what you're trying to accomplish in life. And it's truly a partner. And that's not saying my first wife wasn't. But my first wife wanted that guy that was 9 to 5 and suit and tie, and that's not me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like to shave every day. I'm trying to figure out if I brushed my teeth this morning. which is great about coaching. You don't have to do that on a daily basis. Yeah, but no, my wife still trains every day. She'll get up at 5 a.m. in the morning, go on the elliptical, and do some cardiac output stuff before she goes to work. Right now we're in the process of moving, which is obviously, you know, moving one of the three big stressors in life, along with divorce and death. So we've had to move. She was actually traveling 80 miles round trip to work, teaching at a school here in Phoenix. So we had to split that. I had to take that. I couldn't let her continue to do that. If you've ever been on the I-10 in Phoenix, it's a death trap. Mm. So we moved 25 miles. I now make a 25-mile drive one way into work when it was just a mile when we first moved here. But we're still in the process of moving.
Yeah.
Every time I see a closet of my wife's clothes, I think they reproduce. There's more clothes. It's like staring into the abyss. I'm like, it isn't possible. I filled the car and there's still more clothes. It's my fourth trip. But it's nice to have somebody. And her son, Fred, does a great job with a training facility that we opened up in Buffalo that we gave to him to run. And it's now his entity because I want nothing to do with it. And like I said, I want nothing to do with Buffalo, New York. Worst year of my life. But he now runs it, does a very good job. But he's very great. He's great with nutrition. His name's Fred Duncan Training. He has a Facebook page. You know, like I said, I don't know anything about that. I think he has a website. I've written some articles for Muscle and Fitness. Very intelligent young man, as is Anthony, about nutrition. You know, like I said, that's my one thing I need to spend more time on. But I have a great nutritionist here. Her name's Eric Sharp. And that's not a pun on words, but she's very sharp. I love the girl. She's a former gymnast. She's 10 steps ahead of me. Before it even comes out of my mouth, it's done, and she's got into my face an idea. So I love Erica. She spends time in the weight room watching us train guys. But she's very sharp, very knowledgeable. What I love about her is she's very passionate and is never stand still, always moving forward.
All right, buddy, we've hit the personality round of the interview. Johnny's got the first question.
All right, buddy, usually this question I would ask something about adversity, but I want to make it a little bit more personal. One of our buddies down here in Sydney, Australia, he's a strength coach for a big rugby team. His name's Graham Morris. And I want you to give him some advice. You know, he has a master's degree in exercise and movement kinesiology. For a guy like that and coaches listening at home who want to maybe make that leap, like you said, you know, maybe work for a professional team in America, what's your advice to him?
Oh, boy. Great question. You know, to me, it all comes down. Unfortunately, guys, we're in a profession. It's not about what you know. It's who you know.
Mm.
An interview for this job occurred back in 2001 when BA and I were together in Cleveland. I had a chance to actually do his knee rehab for him when he had knee replacements. I still train him on a daily basis. He had shoulder surgery because we were in Seattle and that last field goal to win the game with 1 second left. Larry jumped on his shoulder and totally tore his rotator cuff.
Oh, my God.
But you know, my everybody asked me how I got here, and I say my interview occurred back in 2001 when B.A. was the offensive coordinator at the Cleveland Browns. You never know when or who is watching you or looking at you.
Yeah.
Number two, unfortunately, you got a network nowadays. The biggest mistake I ever made in my career was not networking, because I'm really not a people person, guys. I really ain't. I'm really not. I'm not going to talk to my neighbors. I don't give two shits how your tomatoes grow. I don't care about the weather. I don't care about, you know, I care about my job, my family, my daughters, the children my wife and I share, and that's about it. So very narrow-minded, like a Louis Simmons.
Yep.
Right? Yep.
That's what drives me, and that's what drives Louis, but that's why Louis is the best.
Yeah.
You know, there's nobody. I've met very few people as smart as Louis, but unfortunately, it's about, you know, what you know, who you know. Here I only hire, honestly, people from Pittsburgh. And the reason I do that is because Pittsburghers have a deep, embedded, rooted into their DNA work ethic. And I love people with great work ethic. I don't like people who think this job is a grind. This job isn't a grind. This isn't even a job. This is fun.
Mm.
When I was growing up, the only thing I ever wanted to do was be an NFL football player. If you'd have told me come out of Library, PA, and graduated from South Park High School in 1975, that I was going to coach in the NFL one day, I'd have said, you're nuts. I never believed it. But, you know, lo and behold, here I am. So every night when I get down on my knees, I thank the good Lord for that opportunity. And, you know, like I think you just got to make the most of your opportunities, and you got to persevere. You know, not every day is going to be a great day. You may not get the job you want, but that doesn't mean you can't do the best job of where you're at now, because, you know, people rely on you. Your athletes look for you, for your help, for your advice. And I take that personally. Like, I take my job personally.
Mm.
I tell my guys, yeah, you can go to your personal terrorist. That's great. But I have a vested interest in you. The organization pays me. I don't have to collect your money. I have a vested interest in everything you do. I had, you know, during this time of year, NFL teams are bringing in potential draft choices. And one of our guys that shows them around, Alphonse, brought two guys in. I couldn't talk to him for 15 minutes because I had nine guys on the floor, and all nine guys were doing something different. You know, because I don't believe everybody's going to benefit from a cookie cutter program. Mm-hmm. So I would say persevere, keep learning, keep reaching out to people. You got a great guy down there in Darren Burgess, I believe, at Port Adelaide. Is that where it is?
Yeah, it is.
You know, I've learned a lot from Darren on training in the heat. And one of the benefits we have in Arizona is hyperthermic training.
Yeah,
you know, in blood sugar levels. So we take advantage of that. You know, there's a guy you would reach out to and say, you know, talk to me about this hyperthermic training. Talk about the benefits of increasing blood plasma and muscle tissue blood flow and improved body thermoregulation ability. Explain all that to me. You know, but continually reach out, continue to learn, continue to introduce yourself, go to clinics, you know, do podcasts, write articles, read books. But I think the big thing, I hate to be redundant, is just, you got to persevere in this profession. This is a rough profession, to be honest with you.
Yeah. What a great way to end the interview. I know you're not a big social media guy, but for me and Johnny, you know, you've just given us an hour of your time, and we are very appreciative of that.
I'm very honored you guys have reached out to me from halfway around the world. Johnny, I want to know how you wind up in Australia coming from
Youngstown. I grew up in Youngstown, Ohio.
I raised my daughters in Hermitage, PA, so I'm very familiar.
Okay, Cranax.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. We used to go up there. Guys listening at home, Cranax is the thing to do in me and Buddy's part of the world during Christmas. They set it up for, like, you see, like, the... Yeah, so, Buddy, I got out here. I went from Youngstown to University of Pittsburgh, and then moved out to Long Beach, California, and lived in Vegas for 2 years. Just constantly still on a mission of, like, figuring out what this life is all about. I met a girl in Vegas who's from Sydney, and I went down to Sydney to visit for my 30th birthday, and then ended up falling in love with the city. And, yeah, I've been here for 3.5 years.
God bless you. That is great. I tell you what, Johnny, one day when I retire, people laugh at me. My daughters always laugh at me. I'm going back to Hermitage, PA to live.
But yeah.
It's a small community, small town. It's in a valley. Nobody will ever find me.
Man. Dude, the food, Buddy. I'm preparing to go back in June, and every time I go back to Northeast Ohio, Western PA, I end up putting on like 12 pounds. I know, dude. Quaker steak wings. You got the pizza. It's just not. You know, I miss all that stuff.
I miss home, but I love Arizona. I love the heat. A couple years ago, Johnny, out and Tristan, I was diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis, which is anybody told me back in the day that arthritis would be this painful, I'd have laughed at them. They give me a cocktail of methotrexate, Voltaren, and prednisone that I take weekly, which really enables me to move. But being out here in the heat is a blessing. I love the heat. I love getting in my pool. That cold weather stuff, you can have that. I can't do that. I'm going to retire to Sharon, PA, or Hermitage, PA, in a small community. My thermostat will be at 100 every day.
Yeah, man.
And not in the winter months. But, I like to go someplace where it's very quiet. You know, my age, I like quiet stability. And Phoenix is a great area, great people, great food. Like I said, I'm very blessed to work for a great owner who's very proactive in the physical preparation. I think he's the only owner in the NFL who truly understands what's trying to be done and what's going on in our physical preparation and the weight room down here.
Yeah. That's awesome, man.
Buddy, do you also eat wedding soup?
I'm sorry, eat what?
Wedding soup. When I went last time with Johnny, they introduced me to this pretty nice soup they're called wedding
soup. So I'm Italian. You know, my family comes from northern Italy, and it's they don't have it in restaurants. He was shocked. It's called wedding soup. Are you familiar with it?
Absolutely. My wife is 100% Sicilian.
Yeah.
Never. Oh, my God.
It's the business.
My wife is a tremendous cook, but, yeah, well familiar with wedding soup. She makes now she works and I work, so most of the time we just go out to eat.
Yeah.
But she makes tremendous, tremendous wedding soup.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah, you got to give Tristan some wedding soup. I don't know if from where you were in Youngstown, Johnny, have you ever heard of halushki?
Yeah, halushki. Yeah, because my dad was from Czechoslovakia, so Slavic. Halushki. Yeah. I tell people, like, I thought that was like a international known dish, halushki.
Nope. No.
Yeah, like, you know, it's, and the pierogies with the, you know, that whole culture, it's pretty unique, that part of the world for sure.
My first wife was Ukrainian from that area, Nazdravia and Bakunyam. All that stuff I used to get talked to about, but yeah, I love halushki. I would, the way I'm gonna have to have my daughters make me some when they come out here to visit. But most of the time, I'm just a big cheeseburger guy.
Buddy Morris, man, you've been a blast.
Absolutely. So next time we're in Arizona, let's go for a burger, eh?
Oh, for sure.
Please stop in. I'll take you guys out to dinner. You're welcome to stay with my wife and I. We always extend our hospitality, and the door is always open. But I appreciate the opportunity from halfway around the world. I hope your listeners learned something. And like I said, I'm really blessed to be here. And I'm really blessed to have the opportunity to speak and actually have people quote me. That amazes me every day.
Yeah, for sure. Well, make sure next time you're in Sydney, it extends to you as well, mate. We'll look after you definitely as well.
Hate the fly. That ain't going to happen.
Thanks so much for your time, buddy. We'll speak soon.
Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Have a good one.
All right, God bless. Thank you.
Thank you. Guys, that was Buddy Morris.
Yeah, what a dude, man. We could have, he invited us to his house. You know, he's sharing, talking about...
I booked my plane ticket already.
Right? Going to Arizona, where it's nice and sunny and dry. But this guy, man, like I said, another one of these dudes we could have sat down and spoken to for hours.
Yeah, absolutely. But, it's great to connect with someone that, you watch their videos, you read their articles... You hear him mentioned by guys like Joe DeFranco, and when guys like Joe DeFranco mentions that he's kind of like...
Yeah, word is bond.
By him, it's kind of like, you do get the fact, that you do need to sit up and notice who Buddy Morris is. So.
Yeah, and all you need to know about Buddy is that work ethic, and when we asked about, when he brought up about bringing guys on internship, he was like, you know what, if they're not from Pittsburgh... I'm not going to even read the resume. And that's not saying he's pro-Pittsburgh. That's saying he's from that part of the world, and he knows how those people are cut in terms mentally, and he knows what he wants.
Yeah.
So it's a testament to where he's gotten in his career and the people that he's going to continue to inspire.
For sure. And I'm sure that we'll go into it into a little bit more detail. So, guys, tune in on the Friday wrap-up show where we'll actually chat about Mike Dolce and Buddy Morris, the week that was, which was a great week for us too.
Yeah, two legends in their respective fields. And other than that, guys, you keep bringing it. We'll be here.
For sure, guys. So we'll check you on Friday for the Friday wrap-up.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.